Evident Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this January the 14th on the West Coast, now January the 15th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. We'd like to welcome all those listening in on Wind Talkers Radio Network around the world, and appreciate you broadcasting the show either live or on an archive. Oh, before we bring on tonight's guest, Jim Murray, just want to reference what we've been talking about for now going on the past week. This shooting in Tucson, Arizona, and the mainstream media's spin of the whole events. I mean, it's just insane. And I have to say that after listening to the pep rally that the no-legged Mac Daddy staged there in Tucson a couple of nights ago, that it was beyond obscene what I saw. And it was obvious that a large number of people were easily mind controlled, not just this individual who I and many others in the know are alleging is an MK Ultra operative, but that they just took advantage of the situation and began to promise hope again, as if you haven't noticed for the past 2 years that if hope is what we're being promised, we don't stand an ice cream cone's chance in hell of getting anything accomplished with this administration, the corruption and the lies and the deceit. But that said, do we need to focus on that right now? There are some facts that are going to come out. I've promised my listeners and my readers that your mind will be blown by some of the facts that I've uncovered as to who's behind this and what this is all about. And it's important for us to reveal the truth to you. That's what we do. That's what we tell you we do. We're not asking you to believe us. You can do your own research and verify the things that we talk about. Some of the research is merely just reading articles that I've written. You can go to my website, directlightproductions.com, click on articles, and read to your heart's content. Years of research in some very, very powerful exposés identifying who these people are. This is another one of these situations, folks. That said, we're going to get more into reality tonight, and we're going to talk about putting some of the concepts that Jim Murray and I have been talking about into action, into usable action. There are methodologies, or there are things that you can do that are quite simple, and they don't cost money, and they just require a little bit of your intention and your creativity and your inspiration and your understanding of how things really are. Before we bring Jim on, though, however, I want to dedicate a song to those that are under the influence of mind control. This is George Duke, and You Touch My Brain.
You touch my brain. Just about going insane. I get this feeling I can't explain. Can you tell me to stop and make me drop like it's hot? Girl, you touch my brain, my body, soul, I'm telling you, it's all the same. My brain, I know it's me and not you, and I'm the blame. But I got nothing to lose, and so much more to gain.
You touch my brain,
I do. Yes, I do. Feeling no pain, no.
Thank you.
I suppose in retrospect, that song, You Touch My Brain, would be an anthem for MKUltra mind control victims. That certainly wasn't George Duke's intention, but I kind of interpreted it as a way to take you outside the box and show you what actually happens to somebody who is under mind control. With that, I'm going to invite back our regular Friday night guest. He is lovingly called our resident science advisor. That's because he is a scientist, inventor, extraordinaire, also an author, lecturer, and teacher, and my co-host on Friday nights on Evident Footprints, Mr. Jim Murray. Jim, welcome to the show. How are you? Hello, Jim. Are you with us? Okay, Seth, if you're listening, we seem to have lost voice contact with Jim Murray. Can you attend to that, please? This is becoming a habit here, folks. Well, what should we talk about? For a moment here, I guess we can stay on this same topic. Dr. H. Huat, who was my Monday guest, penned a series piece about that event in Tucson. And there's been some information that's come forward in regard to some of the photographs of the backyard at the Loeffner residence in Tucson, Arizona, and a sort of a shrine, makeshift shrine, we have to say, because it was set up in an area in the back of the yard near a garden where potting soil and empty pots were sitting, and a skull was featured on this, and it has a sinister tie to a group which practices assassinations and curses, and they're a death cult called the Santa Muerte. And I can tell you that this is part of this whole thing. It's let's say, sort of a side route that one takes when one is under mind control and under the influence of a lot of really crazy stuff. I understand Jim is back with us now. Jim, are you there?
Yeah, I don't know what happened. It just disappeared again, as usual.
Well, it's been happening the last 3 weeks in a row, and that's kind of interesting because we've been on the air together for some 4 years, over 4 years now, you and I, on a weekly basis, and this is... never really happened till, unless, you know, the network gets knocked off the air. But welcome back. How are you?
Fine. It was a nice little short reprieve, but I'm back.
Okay. I know you and I have been doing a number of shows on consciousness and the power of the mind, and we've been talking about energy grids that travel throughout the universe, and they even sometimes make it to planet Earth. Now, whether one has their antenna up to pick up that energy and to translate it into something purposeful is another issue. But I know that you are planning on doing a whole series of shows on the basis of bringing this concept into reality. So I want to turn the mic over to you and allow you to set the stage for what will be coming up in the next weeks.
All right. Well, I think that the reason for me taking this approach needs to be aired as well. I know how difficult it is to take things on faith. And the human being is such that he can do great things once he is convinced of the validity of something. But when you're talking about an area of grayness or an area of uncertainty, the powers that we are blessed with seem to be completely turned off if there is doubt or lack of understanding or any other negative vibration involved. And of course, that's something that the powers depend upon, because the last thing they want is a well-fortified, spiritually enriched world. They want people to be as impotent as possible and just, you know, willing to follow orders and not rock the boat. And of course, that's anything but what we want.
Would you say, Jim, that fear also plays a major role in, let's say, creating a variety of mindsets, if you want to use that term, or insensibilities to what you're talking about?
I think it does, because fear is kind of a mindless thing. Once it has you in its grip, you know, it's like an automatic subroutine in a program. It just takes a hold of you and, you know, it forces you to behave in a certain way automatically, because it brings in all of the survival mechanisms and the, you know, the desire for flight and all the other things that we would expect to find in a situation like where our lives are in danger or something of that sort, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And under those conditions, you certainly don't have the same ability to be calm and focused and take command. And so, you know, all of these things are used against us. I don't think it's just coincidence that fearful things occur in these hard times. You know, this is all part of the design.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you mentioned flight just now, the desire to flee from what it is that's creating the fear, what went through my mind is that, what is that? What is that thing? Well, it's an illusion. So we really have to differentiate between what is real, what is provable, either scientifically or metaphysically, and disregard the mechanisms and the methodologies that are used to create fear. You know, this thing of, you know, we have to have security. Security is our number one priority. And therefore, everything that's done to us is in the name of security, but it never brings about any kind of security. It just makes everything worse. And it puts one further out of touch with the reality that we're seeking, right?
Yeah, of course, but that's the real intent. I mean, you know, you have to be at least smart enough to look beyond what the headlines say or what the immediate explanation of something is, and realize that there's a secondary agenda, and that's really the primary agenda.
Yes.
So the every trick in the book that's being used now has been used for hundreds of years, possibly thousands of years, and I think it's about time that the people start to see things for what they really are.
Mm-hmm. Well, in your mind, and in the context of your experience and your expertise, I mean, you're a scientist, and there are a lot of people out there that would consider themselves to be the regular Joes, if you want to use that term. Nothing special. They work a job. They have a specialty that they earn a living from contributing to whatever business they work with, or whatever they do, whatever they perform as a service or as a means of creating something that that they can market and sell to others who are looking for that. The very idea that someone who's not been paying attention to these things and really doesn't understand them because they haven't been putting them to practical use, I think, is what you want to allude to. Is that correct?
Sure, but in general, I also want to just make the information available to anybody that's interested, because the more that we can solidify our understanding and our belief in the things we're attempting to do, the more powerful you become. And that's the whole reason why, you know, they try to fight you from even going in this direction, is because once the process begins, if it becomes self-fortifying, you know, then for every individual that decides to go down that path, that's one less person that they have on their side of the fence. And that's, you know, that's an important thing to realize.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, as I started to say before, the thing that I think a lot of people find missing in all of this business about consciousness and self-improvement and self-healing and all these other things we've talked about is that they don't believe that they can do it. And, of course, if you don't believe that and you're not willing to try it, then you won't make that jump. And I've talked to a lot of people about this, and it seems that what it really boils down to is that you're in such a never-never land with this type of information that people feel lost. And what they're looking for essentially are instructions.
Mm-hmm.
People are willing to try stuff, they just don't know what to try. And so I started reading a lot of interesting books. Believe it or not, most of them are in the health and I don't know what else you want to call it, health and repair Rounds. Type of genre. And they have to do with the way in which your own attitudes and your own understanding of things can literally bring about changes in your state of health and therefore in your state of being. And this is done by manipulating your own consciousness. But the approach that's given in a lot of these situations are pretty rudimentary. And they essentially revolve around Schrodinger's uncertainty principle, which we've actually talked about from time to time on the show. And basically what it has to do with is the fact that under certain conditions, particles, whether they be electrons or protons or even photons, can change from being actual discrete particles behaving in a certain way into waves, which behave in a totally different way. And it depends on your point of view as to which way they manifest themselves. And this goes back to the idea that if you observe an experiment, you modify it. And the very act of focusing on that changes what's happening. And, you know, when people first hear about this, they'll say, well, yeah, you know, that's such far-out stuff. Who knows what that means? Well, the interesting thing is that you don't have to understand it to make use of it. And basically, all it requires is the realization that you look upon yourself and your situation the way things really are. And in order to do that, you have to be able to at least shed certain aspects of the illusion in your mind if you can't do it in any other way. Like, for instance, looking at your own hand, you've had that thing for quite some time, and so you're very familiar with it, and you just accept it as a part of you. But what is it really? Well, it's a vast collection of of atomic particles that are in a particular locality and have a particular reference to each other, and it's mostly empty space. And in that empty space, you have all of these subatomic movements or vibrations going on, and essentially, all you are is a very well-constructed agglutination of light.
Mm-hmm.
And once you start to realize that this is the way things really are, you can now begin to affect it by your consciousness. And so the books that I've been reading lately, which are pretty amazing, and I would definitely recommend that people go out and get a hold of this stuff, because they give complete instructions on how to produce changes, which for all intents and purposes, you might call miraculous. And it's all done simply by your awareness and using your imagination and using the understanding that once you focus on a particular facet of reality, your attention literally changes what's there. And
go ahead. Are you with us, Jim, or have we lost you again? Okay, Seth is working on bringing Jim Murray back on. This is quite interesting. You see, we're talking about something that will free mankind. And evidently, some aspect of technology doesn't want that information to get out. But it's going to get out. We'll just keep getting Jim on the line as many times as we have to. Hopefully, this will be the last time we have to try to do this tonight. What he was talking about when he mentioned reality, seeing the reality doesn't necessarily mean how you're perceiving what's going on, especially when all these things are constructed for you to observe. Jim, are you back with us?
Oh, yes. I'm back again.
Okay, I was just commenting on your comment about reality, you know, that the person sees the reality and that what they're experiencing and what they're perceiving is going on around them isn't necessarily what you mean as reality, and that you're talking about taking the blinders off and really seeing things for what they are. Am I correct in offering that?
Yeah, in other words, looking at it in its basic essence, which is the way the Creator perceived it when he made it, if you can take that point of view, then that's the perspective that you need to operate in order to inject your intent into the situation and make a change, because what you really do is you become aware of a particular problem or a situation. You view it, you know, on its atomic or its light scale basis, and then when you visualize the change that you want, that is accompanied by an intent, and the intent is the emotion. The emotional feeling for change, for betterment, for improvement, for expansion, whatever the emotion is. And you visualize the change that you want with that feeling associated with it, and you release it. And what I mean by release it is at that moment you just stop thinking about it, and the attitude that you have is that it's already done. And that's just like sending it out in a transmitter, and the consciousness of the universe acts upon it then to initiate a change. And the best way to start this stuff, of course, is with things that are in your immediate control and things that you have, concerns about. Like if you have an illness or if you have something wrong with you that you're trying to influence, you know, those are the areas where you need to start, because the feedback, which is essential for this process to grow, is much easier to get if you're concentrating on healing a broken toe or getting rid of a sore throat, you know, that type of thing. You'll mm-hmm. know right away if there's a change. And and once you know that, then you start to have faith in the mechanism, and then you'll be able to apply it to bigger and bigger tasks.
Yes. When I consider, Jim, the way the craft, which we call flying saucers and other space vehicles that are designed to be symbiotic craft work, is there's a technology that interfaces with the consciousness of the individual that is flying the craft. And if the individual's state of mind is not in harmony with the craft will reflect that by flying in strange directions, maybe even flying out of control, until some stability of the mind is restored. So I use that example just as a visual that you're talking about a symbiosis of sorts. In other words, a biological function that acts in accord with the laws of the universe.
Yeah, but you know what's interesting about it is we already have this symbiosis because we're spiritual beings. Mm-hmm. And the body that we have to use in this plane is essentially created, and it responds in the same way as the mechanism that we're talking about. It's just that we normally don't interfere with the whole process, and we kind of look at it as if it's something beyond our control,
mm-hmm.
and we just kind of go along for the ride. And what I'm saying is that the same forces that are operating to produce life and to sustain us in this world and in this body that we have can, in fact, be overridden, just like when you take a plane and you put it on internal guidance. You can also step in at any time as the pilot and say, okay, I'm going to take over now. It's the same type of a thing.
Yeah.
The mechanism will work whether you leave it on autopilot or whether you decide to manually control your own destiny. And that's the part that people need to concentrate on, is to realize that they can step in and be an active pilot in the mechanisms of their life anytime they want to. And that is the basic essence of the whole science of magic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people say, wow, that's a miracle. But they don't realize that the only difference between the miraculous and what you contend with on a daily basis is your ability to intercede.
Yes. Now, for the person that's, and I think this whole process begins, let's say the person that feels like they're being swept by the current of change and change that's being affected by others, feels that they have no power over it, which you've already alluded to. And really that is a false paradigm of sorts, in that that statement is untrue. They do have to rise above their denial, or they have to come to an awareness that they are in a state of denial. How would you counsel one to begin this whole process? And maybe it's from that point I just mentioned, or it's something much simpler. Do you care to expound on that?
Well, don't forget, I can only offer advice from my perspective, but essentially you have to look at things the way they really are and decide where you stand. That's the very most basic contribution that you have to make to this whole process.
Mm-hmm.
If you were out in the street and all of a sudden people start herding you into the back of a big semi, are you just going to mindlessly crawl up the ramp like everybody else? Or are you going to say, wait a minute, I don't want to go in there?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you do have something to say about it.
Yeah.
Just because the forces around you are doing things doesn't mean that you have to go along with it. You know, that's the very first thing. You have to be conscious of the fact that you're being herded and make a decision, you know, that you don't want to go there. You don't want this to happen. Now, naturally, there are always uncomfortable aspects to any form of rebelliousness, whether it's on a personal level or a social level or whatever. And I think that this is one of the impeding factors in this type of thing, because people say, well, wait a minute, you know, it depends on who's giving the instructions as to whether or not I'm going to be rebellious, because I don't necessarily want negative consequences. But you're getting them anyway.
Well,
you know, that's the whole point.
The instructions themselves are often rebellious. It's just that it's sold to us in a different package. You know,
that's absolutely true. We've given hundreds of examples of how this works.
Yes.
And so the real thing boils down to whether or not you want to take the helm on your own ship, or mm-hmm. whether you want to trust the current that's moving the ship. And if you decide to do the latter, then you really have no reason to complain if you happen to go over the falls or into the rocks or whatever, because you refused the responsibility of taking the helm.
Or like Guam, tip over and capsize. Well, go ahead, Jeff.
Don't get me laughing, because I'm still not over my cough 100% here.
Okay. I didn't intend to make you laugh. That just came out of my subconscious there.
But anyway, you can see the point. Once you get to the state of mind where you're willing to say, okay, I'm going to take responsibility, I'm going to start to do these things, you don't necessarily have to get out there and do some really magnanimous thing that's going to attract a lot of attention or whatever. You know, these are things that you can do in the privacy of your own home, or even in the privacy of your mind. Nobody's gotten to the point where they can invade that domain yet. And so, you know, you start small, just like you do when you join a gymnasium. You know, you don't run over and lift 350 pounds and do 16 or 18 bench presses right away. You start off with 35 pounds or 50 pounds or whatever you can tolerate. And it's the same type of thing with this. You know, you start off with little tiny miracles, little tiny changes, and you gain confidence not only in your ability but in the procedure. And there's a certain amount of experimentation, because everybody's going to be different in the way they respond, and everybody's going to be different in what they can do from the get-go. Some people won't be able to do anything. That doesn't mean that you can't do it. It just means that you have to work into it more deeply and explore, you know, the basic mechanism with respect to your own condition and conditioning, for that matter.
Yes,
but as I started to say, there are a bunch of books out that address this this philosophy, and I don't know, we can discuss this at a later date, Don, but I don't know if it's good to plug somebody's book without permission or not, but in future shows, I'm happy to make mention of what publications I'm referring to if you think it's okay to do that.
I don't see why any author would not want to sell his or her book. And certainly it's out there in the public domain. If you bought the book, acquired it with integrity, certainly you could share the information. You don't have to do that right now, and I think that might distract a little bit, you know, from, because the first thing someone listening on the internet is going to do is try to go find the book, and they're not going to pay attention to what you're saying. That's the nature of human attention span. So,
otherwise known as distraction.
Yes, exactly. But certainly you're welcome to speak about these principles. We've done this on past shows. In fact, you use the term. I just want to make this comment, and then I'm going to let you roll with this and stay in the background. You made the comment that a person has to just perform one small, tiny little miracle, or what we call miracles, are events that happen seldom or never for a lot of people. And when they do happen, we call them miracles because they are so infrequent. When in reality, and you brought up the point that as you produce these tiny events with increased success, and increase frequency, it becomes the norm. And I've always said that miracles aren't really miracles. They are the normal part or the normal aspect of who we are. It's just that we've been put out of touch with them. We've been disempowered to not see this and not put this to use. So that's my comment.
Well, no, it's a very good comment, and it's a truthful observation because, you know, the things that you make use of to produce these effects are normal. It's just that you're disconnected from them in your own life. And so it's not the routine that you're used to. But that doesn't mean that it can't become a regular routine. And once you reach the point where you can start to do these things and see the results, I mean, it'll change your life forever. Just getting back to the publications I've been reading, which I might add are pretty well written, and I also have a good deal of respect for the mission of these people that are doing this and the information that they're delivering. They're actually putting on seminars on how to do this stuff, and I'd like to attend them myself. I really would. The thing that's amazing is that people that attend one or two of these seminars are so animated by what they experience and what they realize they can do that they've gone out and actually just start doing this stuff openly, whether it's, you know, whether it's in the healing domain or whether it's, you know, changing their life in a more positive direction or even affecting the weather and the traffic. I mean, they've just been using the technique, you know, in any direction that they can imagine, and they're getting positive results. And these are people that are certainly not what you might call steeped in mysticism or highly psychic. These are your just normal everyday folks that are being made aware of a certain aspect of their lives that they were never aware of before, and being shown how to access the true creative abilities that God has given each of us.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, you mentioned weather. I can tell you, in my area, we were supposed to get up to 16 inches of snow in the last few days, based on weather predictions of, you know, the meteorologists on TV and radio, and we didn't even get a snowflake. And that was because intention was put on that not occurring.
Well, now, as long as you bring that up, I'll share one with you. You know, I was out east last week visiting my son, and when I got ready to come back, it was on the 11th, and that was the time of this big storm that was supposed to come up the East Coast and bombard from two different directions or whatever. And my flight was supposed to be at 7:30 in the evening. And I immediately checked the computer, and they had canceled that flight as early as 10 a.m. that morning, based only on, you know, trust in the weatherman. And this is, you know, this is done without any regard for whether people are stranded or whatever. And yeah. I couldn't afford to spend another 2 or 3 days there. I had things lined up that I needed to do. So the intent that I released was that I was going to be on a different flight, an earlier flight. And I couldn't even get through on the phone lines. But I still maintained that it would happen. And eventually, all of a sudden, I got through, and they updated the reservation. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that you could say, well, you know, that's just coincidence. That can happen to anybody. But the interesting thing is, when you're doing it, you know that that's not the case, because I could have just sat there and said, oh, well, you know, I'm not going to get out of here today. And then I wouldn't have gotten out of there today. And what people don't realize is that's another intent. You see, it goes either way.
Yes.
And you can definitely steer what happens to you in life by your attitude and the way you take the reins or not.
Yes, including global warming.
Including everything.
Yeah. I just threw that in there just for the heck of it.
Listen, as long as you did throw that in there, let's examine that from this perspective. What
okay.
do people really think was done to us with this idea of global warming? They produced this intent. They magnified it out of all proportion, and they used it for their own ends. Isn't that the same thing that I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these guys know how to do this stuff too, you know.
Yes. Well, the balance that we're looking for in this, and that balance can stop it, and or shift it in the opposite direction. That's there. You see, it's the possibility, but one must act upon it, as opposed to just going with the flow.
Well, you mentioned fear before, and you know, one of the things about fear is that it has a paralyzing effect. You know, if you were to open your garage door and see a lion standing there growling at you, your first inclination would be, you'd be so terrified you probably wouldn't react. And, you know, that's exactly what you don't want to do. You want to maintain your rational control and take a mental and spiritual position on a given issue. You don't want to just let fear flood you and paralyze you into being inactive, because that's the goal. That's what they want.
Yes. Okay, so the average individual now understanding this in an elementary sense, what do you recommend one does to start this process?
Well, they give a whole series of interesting little exercises, but basically what they come down to is visualization, realization of what you have versus what you want, concentrating on the difference of the two, because when you concentrate on point A and point B, you join these things together, on a subatomic level, and your intention has to be there. That's almost, you might say, the fuel that allows it to happen. And then you dismiss it out of your mind with the feeling that it is done. Not that it might be done, or gee, maybe it'll happen, maybe it won't. But you know, it's done for you, and those are the kind of things that you need to do exercises on. You know, years ago, I knew a guy up in Toronto, and he was actually practicing this kind of stuff long before I was, and we never became really good friends. And he never, I don't believe he ever used it for anything really amazing in his life, but he got the biggest kick out of using this exact type of mental imagery and the concept of releasing your intention into the universe, in his little everyday life. And, I was always amazed by it. He used to say things like, oh, don't worry, I know it's rush hour, but when we get there, there'll be a parking space. You watch. Somebody will just be pulling out when we get there. And I'll be darned if every single thing that he said always happened. And, you know, I was in another place in those days, and I didn't pay a whole lot of attention to what the real message was. But looking back on it, I realized that that's what this guy was practicing. Mm-hmm. And if you want to call it magic, that's fine. Call it whatever you want. But the point is, it works.
If I could make a comment, because you're bringing out something that I mentioned a couple of nights ago on my show, in fact. Someone had asked me during the day what we can do, because we have this reality which is based on a Hegelian dialectical structure or construct, problem, reaction, solution. The first thing to do, and it's probably the only thing to do, is to recognize that process, the problem, whatever the event is, however it's being sold to us and advertised and propagandized. If we realize what they're presenting to us as a problem that has to be resolved, and instead of reacting to it, do the opposite and take action. That completely destroys the whole methodology that's at work there. From the perspective of those trying to assert more control and more of their own power over us, to disempower us, to take our energy and to steal our power, or to usurp our power. It would be that simple. The person takes action as opposed to reacting to it, because everybody's, oh my God, you know, the world is falling. They have this desperate approach to solving problems, when really they're just trying to see what they can do, how they can get away with it. You talked about the flight reaction, and you know, so I suggest that when you identify a problem, take action as opposed to reacting to it. Because you just play into it.
I agree with you, because the outcome based on you just reacting to it is, in fact, them bringing about changes with their intent.
Yes.
And so you can counter that and say, oh, that's what they're up to. Just, you know, it should be obvious to anybody that has one-tenth of a brain and even as much consciousness as a poppy seed that almost everything that's presented to you is not for your benefit. It's all BS that's generated by whomever for their best interest. Mm-hmm. So if you actually know this already, then there's no point in getting upset over it. You might as well bring the forces that are yours by your creation and by the authority of the Creator into action, and countermand these things. And that's exactly what you should do. I would dare to say that if we did that with everything that comes along and practiced this as a way of life, that you could we could change this planet completely around the way we want it, as opposed to the way some elite morphodite wants it.
Yes, I agree. Okay, so you're talking about, well, we were about to go into some of these methods. Okay, so it's a simple thing, a small miracle. Let's talk about the mechanism of a small miracle. What makes up a small miracle?
Well, I mean, a small miracle would be like, for instance, if you had a sore throat, it's one thing that you say, oh, okay, I have this sore throat and, you know, I sprayed it and I goggled and I took aspirin and I did this and that and the other thing, and 2 days later it's gone. Well, maybe that's how we look at miracles from the standpoint of the way we are programmed to look at them. But if you were to use this concept and you actually felt the sore throat disappear immediately, that would be a reality to you. You're the one that's stuck with the sore throat. You might even have trouble believing it. You grab a flashlight, run to the bathroom, stare down your own gullet, and you say, my God, there's no more soreness there. It's not red anymore. You know, it's that kind of a thing. It can be a small little infected splinter. It can be a toothache. It could be whatever. The point is that you need to start in your own microcosm, in your own area of command, which would be your body and the things that you have charge of in your daily life. Those are the places where you need to focus, because that's where you'll recognize that you actually have done something. You know, if you start concentrating on, you know, some global thing or something happening in another part of the world, even if it's a wonderful intent, you're not going to get the feedback, because even if it happens,
okay, it sounds like we've lost Jim Murray again. Seth, if you're paying attention here, we need to get Jim back on the call. Yep, he's on top of it. Okay, we're going to trust that this is amazing. It's amazing. So let's put out our intent now. I'll put out my intent that Jim's going to stay on the call the rest of the show. It's amazing how the childlike minds of those that would prevent the truth from getting to grown-ups. Jim is back.
Yeah, that's like three times in one show. It's some kind of a record, isn't it?
Yeah, I put my intention that you're going to stay with us for the remainder of the show and let the children go hack somebody else's call. Their own, for instance.
Well, I have no way of knowing where I was when I got cut off, because I didn't even hear it this time.
Well, you were describing the sore throat. I was going to make a comment that we have a tendency to look for someone else to cure the sore throat for us, or something else. That's a knee-jerk reaction that we've been conditioned to. You have to have this medicine, or you have to do this or that, or you have to go see this person. And that person is not going to use the methodology that you're talking about. Are they?
No, of course not, because they're also immersed in the system. They're just gonna play their role and say, I will now prescribe this antibiotic for you, and it will only cost you $75 for my attention, and another $15 or $20 when you get to the drugstore. And that's the real way things work.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can circumvent all of that and just, you know, picture your throat the way you want it to be, feel the way it used to be before it was sore, and then, you know, make that transformation on a microscopic level, realizing that all you're doing is adjusting your atoms and your light particles or photons or whatever, and just release that into the universe. You know, one of the things that they advocate as a method of doing this is time travel, not in the sense of H.G. Wells, but in the sense of using your own past as a blueprint for what you want to achieve. For instance, sticking with the sore throat thing, if you wake up with a sore throat and you're dying to get rid of it, what you need to contrast that is to go back a week earlier when you didn't have it and just say, you know, that's point A is the way it was a week ago, and this sore throat that I have now is point B, and in your mind, you connect those two by drawing a line between them or a vector or whatever you want to call it. And the minute that you make that link, you have now changed the hyperspace in between those two time sequences. And you inject your intention and release it.
And the language. I'm sorry, Jim. I was just going to say the language that you use is important as well. Now, I'm not chastising what you said, but if you're dying to get rid of it, some people take that.
Okay, those colloquialisms sneak in there. I certainly didn't mean to inject that intention. But the point is, it shouldn't even be done with language. It should be done with imagery, devoid of words entirely, just feelings and pictures, because that's the real language of the creator.
Yes, it's the feeling and the emotion of the prayer that connects with the creator.
And the imagery is essentially allows you to communicate what it is you want. You know, it's interesting because when I was a kid, I was brought up in a Catholic environment. And, you know, when we were really young, prayers were formulas that you just recited almost mindlessly. And I could never understand why it would matter if I wanted to heal something or change something if I said 10 Our Fathers, you know, or 10 Hail Marys. I couldn't figure out the relationship. And I don't think there is a relationship. I think the real way that it works is that you use mental imagery. You create a hologram in your mind, and that hologram communicates to the universe what it is that you're after, what it is that you need, and the intent is the power that propels that. You know, and the idea of releasing it or transmitting it out with the feeling that it has been done, that literally means an act of faith, that you believe that it will happen, and you don't go back and do it again 5 minutes later, or you don't have to. You already know it's being taken care of.
You trust that it's been accomplished. Now, you mentioned Hail Marys, and to add to what you just said, in the movie The Godfather, I don't know if you've seen that, but many of our listeners have. Freddie Corleone is taken onto a small fishing boat on the private lake there at the Corleone estate, Michael Corleone's estate in Nevada. And he's betrayed the family enough that Michael decides it's time to take him out. And he's sitting in the fishing boat with his rod and reel cast into the lake to catch a fish. And he's saying Hail Marys, and he gets a bullet to the back of the head. So the Hail Marys didn't serve him in that instance. Actually, you don't know.
You may have caught a fish at that last moment.
Well, I thought of that, but yes. Question is, who ate the fish?
Well, they probably just let it go, you know. But yeah. Anyway, yeah, I did see that. I remember that. It's a pretty gruesome testament to how low you can evolve if you really want to.
Now, there
we're
those,
interested in moving in the other direction.
Yeah, there are those of the Catholic faith that are going to say, well, wait a minute. Now, I said a bunch of Hail Marys, and I had a miracle happen. It's quite possible that they did the right things, and it wasn't just the Hail Marys, but it was applying these principles that you're talking about. You know,
I'm not saying anything is negative with accepted formulas of prayer. I'm simply saying that the underlying mechanism that really makes stuff work does not have to be tied to a specific prayer or some kind of a formula. And you don't have to be a Catholic to use it either. Anybody can do it. And that's the whole message. You know, this is the same stuff that the shamans use. It's the same stuff that the Bushmen in Australia use. And we have this crazy idea that we're above those people, you know, on the scale of accomplishment or evolution or whatever you want to call it. And in reality, it's not true. You know, those people have remained in touch with a very, very primal and very important gift. And we're the ones that are out of whack. We're the ones that need to get back into sync with what our true nature is all about.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, if we look at it from a scientific standpoint, we have to be careful then to acknowledge true science as opposed to dogma that's put out there to dumb us down. Again, you're actually saying a person doesn't have to be a scientist, or they don't have to understand scientific principles to make this work, that it's much simpler. A child
can
do.
Well, that's true. It is. But the interesting thing about it, since you brought it up, is the fact that there are certain investigations which are ongoing now in the area of quantum physics, for instance, which are bringing scientists to the exact same place that the mystics have arrived at hundreds or even thousands of years ago. And they're finally meeting on a common ground, that they say that you can only go so far in the material world before you wind up at this location, which is another way of saying that it doesn't matter what path you take, sooner or later it's going to bring you to that realization. So why not shorten your trip and go there, you know, directly? And that's what we're trying to help people do here. You know, left to your own devices, you may come to these conclusions when you're 110 years old or 20, 30 lifetimes from now. But if you can get there in one easy step, then why not do it?
Yes. As a long distance runner and a competitive long distance runner in my earlier days, I came to the realization very early on that running fast, and you know, in reality you're competing against other individuals who are also competing to be the first to break the tape at the finish line. And there's this mindset that there is a world record, that one person has run faster than anyone else, and that's the only person that can run that fast. And you learn through training and applying your intention to your training and the discipline that requires, that you can be that person. You don't have to accept the reality as a foregone conclusion, in other words. That's certainly the principle that that individual that holds the world record applied. He or she didn't listen to what others said that would limit their ability to produce the desired result. Their mindset, their intention, their emotion, their dedication to it, all was in sync, and therefore they broke the record. Now, what's the value in that? Well, you just said you can apply it to any aspect of your life and solve any problem and create any reality that you would choose for yourself, correct?
Yeah, it's correct. And the interesting thing is we're actually doing that anyway, even though we're not aware of it. So which is better, you know, to be in control of what you want in your life or, you know, to have your reality created for you either by your lack of interest in guiding your way or, even worse, under the influence of somebody else. And speaking of the influence of somebody else, I'll tell you, I'll share a little thing with you about my early days in competitive sports. My dad was an Olympic contender, along with Buster Crabbe and a few other guys way back in the 20s. And he was an excellent swimmer. And he has trying to groom me for that type of thing ever since I was a little kid. And I picked it up pretty well. I mean, I was a pretty good swimmer. But finally, he got me into competitive swimming. And I didn't really like the idea, but I did it for him. And I'll never forget, as long as I live, we were at Pavonia Pool in Jersey City. And it was in August, gosh, I don't know, 50-something. And I was on the actual diving line getting ready to, to do my strokes. And the guy next to me says, "You'll never beat me." And so when the guy fired the pistol, you know, I went through all the normal routines and everything, but that guy came in ahead of me. I came in second. And my dad said to me later, "What happened to you?" And I said, "Well, that guy said that I wouldn't beat him." And he goes, and my dad said, "Yeah, and you believed him." And I never forgot that, and I never allowed it to operate against me again. And that is so typical of the way our lives run. There are so many people in so many situations that say to us every day, "You can't do that. You have to stay here. This is all you amount to. You know, don't listen to that. Only listen to what I say." And we do it. And then we wonder why we're in the mess we're in.
Yes, and we're told that if we don't listen to it, that we're disrespecting or disobeying authority. And that's merely a reflection of the prior programming that occurred in the individual who's now stepping in as the authority, a parent, for example. And it's not all parents that are that way, but all of them have been, at least the attempt to program all the parents occurred. So,
yep, absolutely. Well, you know, these just becoming aware of these things is really the first step. You know, then you can start to say, "Well, gee, how far beyond this can I actually go if I decide to do so?"
And, I would say,
you know,
there's
the answer
no limit.
Is as far as you want.
Yeah, there's no limit. Can only be limited by the limitations that you impose upon yourself.
Yeah, just like coming in second.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now for the person out there that doesn't have the sore throat or doesn't necessarily have, illness on a regular or even maybe on an, intermittent occasion, but maybe wants to resolve some issue in in their vocation. Let's say they have a job, it pays the bills, but they're not feeling that the opportunity is there for them to do something that they would be happier doing, and that could be more rewarding to them. And we're speaking now, we get into these ethereal qualities, universal quality of abundance, and what that means. It doesn't necessarily mean physical wealth, but a fulfillment that's occurring, which would attract the wealth automatically. Suggestion might you give to someone like that, or am I jumping the gun here and bringing that up?
I don't think you're jumping the gun. I think it's all the same thing, Don. I think that, if a person wants something better by way of career or by way of an improvement within a given career, that it requires the same type of preparation and the same type of execution to make it occur. You know, you have to first of all know what you want and make sure that it's something that's available within the confines of your immediate environment, and then you just start going through these outpicturing, as it's called, exercises. But the one thing I can tell you, and this I can say from my personal experience, you do have to be patient when it comes to something like that, because, first of all, you know, it's a much bigger leap than getting rid of a splinter in your finger or a sore throat. And there may be others that are vying for the same thing, even possibly using the same techniques. So you have to realize that patience is a real important thing. What I learned by virtue of my own life and the things that I've requested from the universe over the years is that you can put a spin on it of urgency as part of your intent, but you also have to be mature enough to realize that certain things are only going to happen in God's good time, not yours. And if you can live with that part of it, then I would venture to say you can have anything that you ask for. Just you don't always get it at the instant that you want it. But if you're persistent, it'll come to you in time.
Yeah, I can hear the wheels turning in the listening audience's consciousness. People are thinking, boy, if I could apply this principle to winning the lottery, then I would solve all my problems. I'd have all this money. And that's possible, too. That's a possibility. But is it a practical pursuit? That becomes the issue. And I think you said something, you know, you have to make sure that that's available to you. The odds are against you winning it. It doesn't mean that you can't, but should you be wasting your time? And I think in the long run, it would be a waste of time just on the basis of the odds to make that your sole pursuit in life.
Well, not only that, but look at it this way. Every lottery that's worth playing is advertised to the hilt, and there are hundreds of thousands of people that are just as eager to win it as you are. Now, I'm not saying that every one of them is going to be using this type of an approach, but if they have a real intent and they're playing it, you know, with a dedicated attitude, you know, that can certainly muddy the waters for you. I think that part of the problem that we have in our entire society is the belief that having money is the solution to everything. There's a lot more subtle and more powerful, rewarding aspects to life that need to be focused on. And the irony of it is, if you achieve those ends, money will come to you automatically. You know, it's like all of these various teachers and whatnot. They talk about self-improvement. If you improve your technique in something, if you spruce up your personality, if you do all these other things that make you a better person or allow you to do your job more effectively, you know, the financial rewards that come to you will not only be as a result of your actual efforts, but they will also be in proportion to what you deserve. You know, it's easy to say to the universe, well, I need $20 million. But that's just human greed talking. What do you really need on a spiritual level? Do you really think that your particular assessment of the situation is the same as the way the Creator is going to view the situation for you? You know, I know better than to think that everything I pray for is going to be mine. But there are certain situations where I think that I'm entitled to certain things. You have to ask yourself the question, you know, are I entitled? There goes my English, R-I. Am I entitled to $20 million that I didn't do anything to earn? You know, that's something that you have to take up between yourself and God. I don't know the answer to it. But I do know, for instance, that if I apply myself for 25 or 30 years to perfect a particular thing, and I need just a little bit of help to make it work, I would be able to justify actually being given that assistance in view of what I've already invested. Part of the problem in our society is everybody expects everything for nothing. And that's what's gotten us into this trouble to begin with.
Yes. Well, what you just described is really in principle how it would work, how your if you want to use the word fortune, although, you know, some apply that to luck. But let's say you're looking to have an increase in financial abundance that can be applied to the work for the purpose of applying it to the work that you're doing to bring it about. And there is someone out there who has devoted themselves to helping people do that financially. So your intent will attract that person to you, and it'll happen in the strangest way. You'll see a series of events that occur between you and other people of like mind and like heart and like intent. And we're speaking about aligning themselves with the natural order of the creation. They don't have to get into the quantum physics of it per se and look at it through an electron microscope. I don't even think that would allow you to see what's actually occurring. But I use that as a metaphor. And I think people, because of the conditioning and the limited consciousness that we're encouraged to experience, that these things remain out of reach. We can't grasp these things on our own, and we always think that we have to have someone else help us at each stage of what we're doing. And what you're saying is that this is a foundation for bringing about these changes. This is real change. This is not a political promise to produce change or to offer a false hope. This is very pragmatic and real. Your comment, Jim.
No, I think you hit the nail right on the head. That's the whole point, you know. What is it that makes us, I mean, we have to ask this question to ourselves and be honest about the answer that comes. What is it that makes us think that we need to have help with everything. You know, if you stop and think about it, you realize that you have been conditioned to believe that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what about the Aborigine that's in the middle of nowhere and needs a drink of water? I mean, who does he turn to? You know, he uses his higher self, and all of the instincts and whatnot that he has, you know, relied upon for survival, and that's a different story. We are like lost sheep in our everyday existence. You know, when you stop and think about it, we rely on somebody else for almost everything. I don't know
yes.
how that makes you feel, but it makes me feel really uneasy. Because
well,
what
yes.
happens if those people aren't there?
Mm-hmm. Someone sent me a very interesting analogy of what politics is and why we don't get what we think our representatives in Congress or in any political body are alleged to be providing or representing us to accomplish. If you and the story is very simply a cage. You take five monkeys in the cage and you hang a banana from the top of the cage, and you put a small stairway in there, and as a monkey realizes there's a banana and he climbs up the stairway to reach for it, you blast water at the monkeys, and of course this is a very negative experience, and the monkeys associate that negative feeling with that, and so the next time a monkey begins to climb up another and the same monkey or another monkey, you blast them with cold water. They become enraged at the monkey that's now putting them in this position to be blasted with this water. So they will begin attacking whatever monkey attempts to get the banana hanging from the top of the cage. Now, over time, you replace a monkey with a new monkey, and every time a monkey will go up the stairway to grab at that banana, the other monkeys will automatically attack without the water being sprayed at them. And they will gladly attack because they are seeing all the other monkeys doing that. And in other words, without even understanding why they do it, they just accept it and do it. And that's politics. That's what I think it's a very good analogy because, you know, if you put 100 monkeys in there, is that going to change? You know, the 100th monkey. But it doesn't seem to have changed. We've got 535 representatives in Congress, and it's not made things better. They're all trying to grab the banana. And as much as we spray the cold water on them, they want to retaliate by going after us. It's 180 degrees of what it should be. And I tell people, if you want to change that reality and the promotion of that reality through the media and the lies that we're told, do an about face, turn around 180 degrees and follow your nose. That's the direction that you will find your answer that you're looking for. And people should be putting their intention on a solution for those types of problems too. Certainly, it begins with the individual. Each individual, we've talked about this a million times, Jim, has to recognize the role that they are playing in affecting the outcome or the results of these events throughout their life before we can collectively apply that principle. It's called taking responsibility for oneself.
Yeah, it's interesting that you should bring that up because about the collective effort. You know, years ago, I was very interested in Rosicrucianism, and one of the things that that they did as a group, they would train you in certain mystic principles, and then there was a monthly goal, and you would apply those mystic principles toward achieving that monthly goal. And at a particular time, which was pre-designated and communicated to all of the members, everybody in that entire organization worldwide would attempt to manifest that particular desire upon the fabric of the world. And I don't know how well it worked, because I didn't remain in that group very long, but I think it's a very interesting idea. You know, if the world wants change, the world can certainly have it, but it's got to be synchronized, and it's got to be a common intention globally, and it's got to be for the good, the general good. And I believe it can be brought to reality by that mechanism.
Yes.
But you have to start with the small stuff first, and then, you know, build into these other things, and eventually get entire communities to do this type of thing.
Well, I'm sure our listeners are fascinated with this. Those that are hearing something that's resonating within them, that there certainly is the possibility of recognizing one's true inner power that can be outwardly manifested. Do you want to make a closing comment, or recommend at least one book that they could start off with, or do you want to hold that off until next week?
No, I think your caution earlier was a good one. If we do it at the beginning of a show, that's not the best time to do it, because you might have people rummaging around looking for all this stuff instead of listening to the show. But I have two books here that I recently acquired, and I'll be happy to share the titles with them. They're both by the same guy. One of them is called Matrix Energetics, and it's by Richard Bartlett, Bartlett, and he is a chiropractor somewhere up in the state of Washington, I believe. And his second book, which I haven't started yet, but I really am interested in, is called The Physics of Miracles, Tapping into the Field of Consciousness Potential, by the same author. And interestingly enough, the bibliographies in both of these books reference all kinds of stuff that's also available. So, you know, the way to look at this is not only as a self-improvement course, which it certainly is, but also as a guideline into all of the other materials that this guy read, which brought him to these conclusions himself. So it's, for anybody that's serious about this, I think it's a great place to start. And this gentleman also offers seminars, which, as soon as I can afford the time, I will definitely sign up for, because I want to know more about it. I want to become more involved.
Yes. Well, I appreciate that information, and I'm sure the listening audience does. You've got my interest perked up here, and I've read a number of books over the years. I've read some books, Jim, and I'm sure you have, and our listeners, where we might glean one or two things out of the whole book that are really practical. I find it interesting that so many chiropractors have entered the world of the more mystical sciences, because they realize that the human condition, and with all of its aches and pains, seems to be following a certain pathway, and in their intent to better serve the people who they they heal. They are really looking for solid answers in a variety of ways. And I know many chiropractors that take more of a metaphysical approach to applying their discipline. It sounds like it is really interesting information. And you swear, I don't use that in a negative sense, that it's very basic, that anyone can do this, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I can just, I've already worked on it myself, and the way in which it's presented is certainly basic enough, at least in these writings, where anybody can certainly attempt to do these things, and with a little bit of practice have results. I mean, there's all kinds of testimonials involved in the back of these books that other people advocate this practice. But the interesting thing is they don't just say, oh, yeah, you can do it. They get into it with an enormous amount of passion because they're so flabbergasted at the fact that they actually can achieve these things and use these principles themselves. They were doubting Thomas's just a little while back. And so that comes across very, very strongly. And I think that's one of the most amazing aspects of what this guy is teaching, because it's self-propagating. The intent and the feeling of success and the accomplishment that goes along with it is just as vital to transmit this information as describing the techniques. And so I think that's one of the reasons why it's growing exponentially, is because people are having success. You know what I mean, John?
Yes, I do. Now, next week, our plan is, as I understand it, to go into the mechanics of how all of this works, maybe on a little bit more scientific level, but still, in a way, you have that gift of taking the most complex principles and reducing them to something that's very pragmatic and understandable to anyone. So I look forward to next week's show, if that's your intention.
Well, that's my intention at the moment. I will certainly take it as far as I can. Between you and me, I have to delve into the second book a little bit more deeply between now and next Friday. But that was my intention to do that, and that's not only going to be good for the listening audience, it's going to be good for me, too.
Yes, and me. Jim Murray, I want to thank you for your wonderful information and your tireless devotion to bringing forth wisdom and knowledge and sharing that with our listening audience. I really appreciate you for that. And start using this to get rid of that sore throat that you have.
There you go.
All right. Well, I wish you a great weekend, and I look forward to your next visit on the 22nd of this month, next Friday evening, on Evident Footprints. You have a great weekend, my friend.
Thank you very much, Don. I wish you the same, and I look forward to being with you again.
Thank you. Folks, that wraps it up. You've been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com and tonight's special guest, scientist inventor Jim Murray. Special thanks also to Wind Talkers Radio Network. Over at BBS Radio, I want to thank Seth Hendrick on the sound. Seth has been working overtime tonight, getting Jim back on the call. Also, thanks to Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible. And most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Join us next Monday when my special guest will be Dr. Atruat. I wish everyone a great weekend, and I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.